You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Shamitha Basu, in for Tanzina Vega. Over the last couple of months, we've been checking in with communities across continents about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting life. Now we head over to Indonesia, where the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 has been steadily growing, while cases in other parts of Southeast Asia have been decreasing. We should note, though, that compared to its population size, the percentage of cases in Indonesia isn't like what we're seeing in the United States, but a sharp increase could overwhelm the developing nation, one of the largest countries in the world. Today, Indonesia reported new daily highs of coronavirus cases, and earlier in the month, the government banned domestic travel during one of the largest Muslim holidays of the year, Eid al-Fitr, that just passed this weekend. We go to Tom Allard, the Reuters chief correspondent in Southeast Asia, who lives in Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, to hear more. Hi, Tom, and welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you, Shamitha.
Now, why has there been a rise in new coronavirus cases in Indonesia?
Well, look, Indonesia has got a kind of unique corona infection profile, really. At the outset, the government was extremely confident that they wouldn't have a problem. They were betting on the hot weather. They were betting on prayer. The health minister spoke very highly of the impact of prayer. So they were very slow mm-hmm. to develop the kind of social distancing responses and other measures that we've seen elsewhere in the world. But maybe the prayers work to an extent, in that it seems that we haven't seen, as you said in your intro, the kind of explosive growth that we've seen in the US, and perhaps mm-hmm. the hot weather is part of that, right? But what we are seeing is just a steadily growing upward, relentless curve. So they are it's becoming a real problem for this country because, they don't have the money, they don't have the hospital system to cope with a major outbreak. And already, because of the somewhat belated measures to restrict travel, to implement social distancing, so many people have lost their jobs. We're talking we're talking about 30% of people were on social welfare. Now it's 70%. So the government said, we're going to run out of money at the end of July and we can't continue. So they've got a real dilemma here because they want to kickstart the economy, but at the same time, the coronavirus infection rate just keeps rising.
Are there concerns that the Indonesian government isn't telling the truth about the virus or reporting cases accurately?
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, the president of Indonesia in mid-March rather frankly and quite amazingly said, look, we're withholding information from the public because we don't want to stir panic. And that, if you think about a public health crisis, is probably what you don't say, because it created a lot of anxiety and questions about what exactly the government is telling it. And to be sure, the government has been reluctant to provide some very critical data that the epidemiologists want here in terms of suspected cases, which are enormous, and the true number of deaths. And underlying this dilemma is that Indonesia has one of the lowest testing rates in the world. It's something like 150 people per million have been tested thus far. So it's extremely low. So everyone is in the dark, and that's created a fair degree, as I said, of anxiety amongst the population.
Now, Tom, despite the recent rise in cases, the government opened up domestic travel after it had restricted it about 3 weeks ago. Why the reversal?
Well, I mean, simply put, they want to restart the economy, and they see this as a measure. The way that they're trying to, ameliorate the negative effects that would have on the coronavirus's spread is to force everyone to wear masks and to enforce social distancing and that type of thing. But, the jury is out, shall we say, whether that's going to be a successful strategy. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, it's Eid al-Fitr at the moment, and that's a great occasion for most Indonesians. It's the biggest Muslim country in the world, majority country in the world, and everyone returns home to their villages to celebrate this occasion with family and friends.
And that was just this past weekend, right? It was to mark the end of Ramadan.
That's right. And it finished, it literally finished yesterday. So the government ostensibly banned Mudik, but that was the official policy. But as you say, they began to open flights up, and basically a lot of people left anyway. And so despite all these pleading from the government to stay at home, to do video conferencing or whatever, to communicate with their families, a lot of people have returned home. And we've seen a lot of images of huge crowds gathering to pray together, to chant Allahu Akbar. And the fear is that down the line in the next couple of weeks is going to lead to another surge in coronavirus infections. Mm.
Earlier, you alluded to Indonesia's healthcare system not being well equipped to handle a surge in new cases. Can you describe a little bit how the healthcare system there works?
Yeah, well, look, it's never been a priority for the Indonesian government. They've begun to throw a lot of money into infrastructure, to a lesser extent education, but health has always been down the bottom of the leaderboard, so to speak. So you're talking about 4 hospital beds per 10,000 people in Indonesia is the kind of ratio. That's probably 10 times less than most developed countries in the world. So if the coronavirus rate of infection continues to climb, you're going to find a lot of that the hospitals will become quickly overwhelmed. I mean, we're talking here, it's a country of 270 million people. They have 8,000 ventilators. Mm. And that includes ventilators for, premature babies, which I'm not sure can be readily utilised for adult coronavirus infection sufferers. So they're in a very precarious state should the infection rate continue to climb. I mean, there's all sorts of measures. They are trying to build their own ventilators for coronavirus sufferers, and that's being mobilised. So maybe that will come to the rescue. And thankfully, given that it has been a relatively slow, steady climb, that probably gives the government a bit more breathing space to get all that into gear. But we shall see. But the other problem is, as I said, with all these people returning to their villages, this was a pandemic or an epidemic that started in the capital city, Jakarta, but it has quickly spread to every corner of Indonesia. So there are infections in every province, in most regencies. So it's in those outlying areas where the hospital system is particularly weak and particularly vulnerable should things get worse.
Mm. Tom Allard is the Reuters chief correspondent in Southeast Asia. Tom, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Shamitha.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.